Welcome to the I Still Call Australia Home podcast, your fortnightly dose of inspiration and joy sparked by the wild splendour of Australia. I'm your host, Felicia Rusher, founder of IStillCallAustraliaHome.com, an e-commerce store selling gifts that spark joy and delight while using Wild Australia as their muse. I'll be taking you on the road, sharing inspiring stories of amazing Australians who are creators of products and experiences using our land, native animals and wildlife as their muse. As well as a warm welcome to all our listeners in all states of Australia, I'd like to say a special bonjour to our listeners in France and a howdy to those we can see are listening from America. Shout out to those of you in Tennessee, Virginia and California. Hello and welcome to listeners from Michigan, Pennsylvania and Missouri. Hi to our listeners in Singapore and a special hello to those of you in the UK. Obviously, you guys can't come over here right now, but I think you're going to like today's episode because you're going to see more of Australia through the eyes of Victoria McGrain, founder of The Scenic Route. I've known Victoria for a number of years now and seen her business flourish over that time. She illustrates beautiful Australian flora and fauna artworks that she licenses out and are used on a variety of products. On New Year's Eve 2019, Victoria bought a bus called Daisy and has been running her business and travelling around Australia since then. I think you'll enjoy her story, so sit back, relax and hop on board with us as we take you on the road less travelled with Victoria and Daisy the bus. Hi Victoria, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining us today.
Hi Felicia, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you. I'm excited to have you here. And whereabouts are you today?
So I am currently in Narrabeen in Sydney, which we're just on a little bit of a break. I'm normally to be found on the road, but yeah, having a little bit of a van life hiatus.
Oh, awesome. Well, a warm welcome. So for those listeners who don't know you, can you introduce yourself and the Scenic Route and just tell us a little bit about yourself and your company?
Sure. So I am Victoria and I am the creative and illustrator and artist behind the Scenic Route. I basically run the whole show, but my partner Darren has recently joined me in business, which is amazing. Great. My main product, I guess, is my illustrations. So my background is as a textile designer. So I really love creating really intricate hand illustrated designs and patterns. I was thinking about this recently and I think I really would like to describe myself as a visual storyteller. So what I'm really trying to do through my work is to capture the beauty of Australian nature. I do a lot of traveling. So, you know, I love to capture all the things I see on my travels. And hopefully by capturing that beauty, I'll inspire other people to want to treasure and protect our native beauty.
Oh, beautiful. That's lovely. Definitely. I'm with you on that one. I think just seeing our natives around us is very good to have empathy and foster a caring for them that otherwise is missing.
Yeah. Mm. And one thing I forgot to add. So the name The Scenic Route, like I mentioned, I love to travel a lot, but it's also kind of based on my personal philosophy, which is to choose the path less traveled, the path of beauty, and to just take it slow and enjoy the scenery along the way. So a lot of the things I draw are the small details and little things that I see. And I guess the other thing that's really important to me is to live my life as sustainably as possible and to reflect that in my lifestyle but also in my business. So, yeah.
Oh, that's lovely. Oh, thank you for sharing that. How long have you been, has the Scenic Route been around?
So I've been around for just under 4 years. I originally started sort of by accident. I started it as a bit of a side project when I was working full time. I was living in Coffs Harbour at the time and I had a nice shed in my backyard. dubbed the Lady Cave, where I could just go and be really creative. And I started doing some screen prints onto paper of some of my illustrations. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and then it was coming up to Christmas and my partner was like, oh, you know, you should put these on cards. That'd be a really nice idea. So I put some on some greeting cards and took some around to like some local little art galleries and shops near me, and they went really well. And it just kind of started from there.
Lovely. Fantastic. And what sort of products do you sell now? So you had greeting cards when you and prints, was it, when you started?
Yep. So greeting cards and prints. But something that I've really moved into doing is fabrics. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, that sort of happened quite naturally. I, you know, I've always loved turning my artworks into patterns. So I do some licensing of my prints. So I've actually licensed some designs to Spotlight. I work with another company called Nerida Hansen, who's released some of my fabrics. And then I also have some, you know, that I sell through my own website. Mm-hmm. So that's turned into like a really big part of my business. Mm-hmm. And then I sort of took a bit of a break from doing other products for a while, especially during the pandemic, because it became a little bit tricky for me. Partly from the pandemic, but also just getting used to being on the road, and you know, I've sort of had to do some workarounds on how to make it happen. But this year I am going to be doing a bigger stationery range. So I've got notebooks coming. I've got colouring books. And I also every year do a calendar, which is really popular. Mm-hmm. And I use the calendar to raise funds. So the last 2 years I've raised funds for Rainforest Rescue, mm-hmm. Where I donate $5 from every calendar to them. And both years they've sold out. So I think I'm going to increase my production on that this
Yay.
Year. Yeah, also doing tea towels as well, which are really exciting. So,
great.
So
much stuff. Hey, lots of stuff then. Lots going on. So we've sort of talked a little bit about before you started the Scenic Route and what inspired you to start. But what were those first designs you put on your greeting cards and screen prints?
So I think the first designs were I did like a cockatoo design, which I think you bought one of the very first prints of. And I did like they're all just native birds, and they were things that were in my garden. Like I used to sit at my desk and look out at the noisy miners, which I know a lot of people hate, on the banks here outside my window. So I did those, some rainbow lorikeets. A lot of things were like just, you know, pretty simple designs, but things that I loved. And I think for years I had it in my head that, oh, it has to be something really conceptual or really special, or not that they're not special, but I don't know. I think I do actually have a background from art college. So I really studied painting. And back when I studied art, it was all about, you know, let's explore rupture, and Damien Hirst was the big thing. And it's all like so conceptual. Yeah. And I remember being like, oh, you know, I want to do like a nice painting of, you know, flowers, and they just laughed at me. So I ended up dropping out of art college and going to TAFE. Yeah. And I went to TAFE and studied textiles. And I think on the first day, my lecturer said, there doesn't have to be a reason behind it. It can just look nice. And these are the design principles. And I was like, these are my people. So, I like it. Yeah, so
you've got to be authentic to yourself when you're creating, don't you? You can't like try and emulate others.
Oh, definitely. And I think it's such a relief to just be doing the things that I love and that I like, and you know, letting go. And that's part of getting a bit older, I guess, where you can just let go of that sort of pressure of like, you know, oh, it needs to be this or it needs to be that. Yeah. And yeah, I just literally, like, you know, I've always had this, going right back to childhood, loved, like, you know, May Gibbs is a huge inspiration. Where the Forest Meets the Sea, like Possum Magic by Mem Fox, Animalia, like all those books. And I could just sit and read them over and over and over for hours. And it still influences my style today, where it's, you know, it is what it is. Like, it's just, I think it's really special still, but it doesn't have to be, you know, this very conceptual high art thing.
No. Well, I think what's beautiful about what you do is you're very authentically representing Australian nature. So it's a very accurate depiction of the animals, but you managed to put your own whimsical twist on it. So it's very magical the way you depict it, which is really unique. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Thank you. And I think, I definitely have, you know, at the time when I started the Scenic Route, I had a great job. Like I was so lucky and I was working as a in-house textile designer for a really good company, but it was very commercial and trend-based. And it was almost like a physical relief to just be able to do something, you know, because it would be like, oh, okay, we're going to do a paisley scarf print or a Japanese floral, or, you know, it'd be the same trends over and over. And, you know, to get the palette, you'd get everything. And it was just like, honestly, like I just had this creative drive to do something that I could, you know, that really meant something to me. So like, I know it just seems silly, but oh, it was like a physical relief being able
to. No, it doesn't seem silly at all. I can only imagine. Yeah. Having to be in this tiny little box that people are telling you creatively what to do.
Yeah. And, you know, and you feel bad complaining because you're like, oh, you know, I've worked my way up to this point in the industry and, you know, I am really lucky and there aren't that many jobs. And yeah, and then I'm like, oh, I don't want to do this.
Thank you, but no thanks.
Yeah, I want to draw birds instead. Thank you.
Well, it's fantastic you actually made the move, because I think a lot of people would have stayed in that job and made it happen. That's really great.
Yeah.
Was there anything early on that sort of, I guess it was a big deal to leave that job, and what was the turning point then? Because you said you were doing it as a hobby. What was the day or the moment where you said, I'm definitely going to do this on my own?
So I think the big one was the first Finders Keepers market I did, because that was they gave me a debut stall and I was very I think I'd had my business for about 6 months, drove up to Brisbane, packed the car, and I thought, oh, what have I done? You know, I had all this stock and I thought, oh, that's it. Like, this is crazy. And my boyfriend came up with me, packed everything into the car, and then we sold out of pretty much everything. And
wonderful.
Oh, it was incredible. Like, it was so emotional, and, you know, just meeting all these people and having everything on it's not a big scale, but, you know, I don't know, it was a big turning point for me. And that was the weekend that I realized, nope, I can do this as a business, because there is a market for what I'm doing and people love it, and getting to talk face to face to people about it. Yeah, it really, really motivated me to go full time.
Oh, fantastic. Aren't we lucky that you went to that Brisbane Finders Keepers?
I know. Like, Finders Keepers really is such a great launching pad, I think, for so many makers and artists and designers. Like, yeah, I hope. Yeah, I know it's been really tough for them with COVID, and, you know, they had to cancel so many markets last year. And yeah. I just hope, yeah, it can continue. I'm
absolutely
sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very amazing. Yeah. On the app every day.
Yeah.
So what's interesting about your story, I think, is that you mentioned it before, that you are basically the doer of everything. And I was pleased to hear you've got Darren on board as well. Can you, how do you juggle it all? Like, how do you be creative and have the business side of it? Like, can we talk a bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the honest answer is I just do my best. And I did have a little bit of a burnout maybe a couple of years ago, I think I've blocked it, where I was just trying to do way too much and, you know, trying to do wholesale and really do that and have my online store and have, you know, a lot of products, you know, which I've scaled back now, and really putting a lot of pressure on myself to try and do everything perfectly and, you know, going to a trade show and looking at these bigger businesses and sort of thinking oh, I need to be like them. And it was just way too much. So I actually took a little bit of a step back and decided, right, I'm going to really focus in on the things that are working well and also just just be kinder to myself. I also learned, I did some business coaching, which was really good. And I learned a lot doing that about outsourcing and, you know, getting help with things. So I do, at the moment, I mainly outsource my bookkeeping and my accounting. Mm-hmm. And then I still actually do a lot of stuff myself. The other big thing that I'm outsourcing is all of my warehouse packing, posting to a 3PL.
Mm-hmm.
that was the best decision I've ever made, because I was trying to, you know, design. And if something was really popular, then you're spending like a whole week packing and you can't get anything else done. So that was such a great thing to outsource that. But honestly, like, it is really hard. And sometimes I just have to let go of things. And, you know, and I think one of the big things as well that I've had to let go of is social media. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know if it was the right decision, but I'd really taken a little bit of a step back from worrying so much about posting on social media, because it's a huge amount of pressure. Mm. And you get sort of caught on this hamster wheel where, like, I was like, but my engagement's really good and, you know, I have to post at this time and that whole thing. And you start to become really fixated on it. And now I'm just like, oh, I'm just going to post when it suits me, what suits me, and do my best. But I can't, you know, let it take up so much time because... Mm. So, yeah, I mean, that's a lot. But also, like I mentioned before, my partner, so while we were on the road last year, he started helping me with the business, and he officially started helping me in January this year. And now he has taken on board so many things. And just this week, he turned around to me, because things are really starting to, you know, this time of year, as you know,
yes,
kick off a bit, where it's like, oh gosh, we have to get the range finished and do this and do that. And he was like, okay, I'm impressed. I can't believe you did all of this on your own, because I'm finding it a lot. And, you know, he's basically doing the wholesale. He's uploading products to the website, doing some admin and managing the inbox. And it's just, oh, it's like heaven, because can focus on the design. And so, you know, focus on the design and the marketing, which I'm good at. And yeah.
I'm so pleased to hear that, Victoria, because I don't know how you did it all yourself. I know that just, you know, I'm just running an e-commerce business. I'm not even creating products at the moment, and that's enough.
Oh, it's so much. And like, I'm so impressed by how much you do, like, honestly. So it's, yeah, but I know you understand.
Takes one to know one, I think.
Definitely.
But no, definitely you've got that design element. So how do you carve out time to do your designs with everything else going on?
I have to be really strict now. I put my phone on airplane mode. I pop a show on a streaming service, something really trashy preferably, and I just try and block everything else out. I have to, you know, I call it my deep work time, but that is honestly the only way I can really get stuck into it.
Please say.
Oh, no, but like, if I'm being distracted by, you know, Instagram or my phone or people calling me, it's tough. And I guess the other thing I had to do was I did get into a thing where I was doing a lot of commissions, which is something that happens naturally. If you're on social media and other people see what you're doing and really like it, you know, people want to collaborate or get you to do commissions, which is amazing. And it's such an honor. And I'm, you know, absolutely. But at the same time, my work is really detailed.
Yes. I was going to say, that's a lot of time of your time.
It takes so long.
Yeah.
I really just only have so much to give. Like, I truly do. And so I've had to sort of, oh, it's so heartbreaking sometimes, because I've been offered some incredible opportunities and I've learned to have to say, I'm sorry, I can't do that. And there's a few people that I do work with that I really treasure. I just can't do it. So I want to get more into just licensing my designs as is.
Yeah.
But in terms of like doing special commissions for people, maybe one day in the future, but right now it's just not something that I can do, which makes me sad because I love doing
it. Well, it's not a no forever. It's a no for now.
Yeah. I've just got to kind of focus on the scenic route for a bit and really, I've just got all these ideas in my head and it's just, sometimes I get so frustrated because I'm like, how can this take you so long? You know, I'll be like, I just spent 9 hours doing this 10, you know, 20 centimeter piece. Yeah. Work like
absolutely. Why? Well, it's very detailed, and it's not just the drawing, is it? It's the thought behind the palette, the composition, the subjects, the depiction. as well as physically doing it.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. That doesn't surprise me at all. But how do you actually, when you say, so when you're in that deep work time, you are completely switched off, but do you try and schedule a day a week or, you know, how do you, or do you decide, okay, do you just get to the point where you go, okay, for 2 days I'm going to be doing this, or how do you do it?
Well, okay, so in an ideal world, like I have this weekly planner that I'm looking at now, it's above my desk where, you know, I have different days scheduled for different things, and that's what's meant to happen all the time. And, you know, Darren and I are meant to have a Monday morning meeting, and Monday, right, you know, weekly planning session, Monday is my admin production logistics day.
Yeah.
And ideally Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday are just dedicated to creative time. And then Friday is like my marketing kind of day where I do my blog, like work on my social media, work on my website. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that's just not how it works. Yeah. And what tends to happen is I get to a point where I'm like, if I don't finish designing the range, I'm not going to have a range. So I'm just going to have to like basically turn all of my devices off and like lock myself in a room and design.
So until it's done.
And I think it's because, so you do all the artworks and you're like, brilliant, I've done the range. And then you're like, oh, then you've got to put it all in InDesign and like do the layouts for the cards and, you know, like write a little story for like everything. So there's that whole bit that which takes almost as long. You know, I had a whole thing the other day, I'm doing these new notebooks and I'm like, is it note to self or notes to self? Note. And I honestly sat there and contemplated for like 2 hours, and then I did go on Instagram and just put a poll and I'm like, can you guys decide?
Yeah.
This is just doing my head in.
Yeah, popular vote sometimes a good way to go, isn't it?
Yeah. So I do. I allow myself to jump on Instagram if I'm just procrastinating and I just need like people to help me make a decision. And that is a really good way to do it.
Oh, dear. Oh, well, that makes a lot of sense, how you manage to get it all in.
Well.
But it's good to have deadlines sometimes because it forces you to get things.
It is, but it's also important to have boundaries, and I do need to have time off on the weekends. I need to have time off in the evenings. I don't want to get back into the situation where I'm just working all day and night, because that's not why I wanted to do this, you know. It's, I do want to have like a happy life as well. Yeah. And sometimes you can start to really resent your business if you're doing it. So it's about finding, like Darren and I were chatting the other day, and it's about finding that balance. And he was like, I don't want us to impose any artificial deadlines. Some things, you know, with wholesale, for example, there's certain cutoff dates that, well, you can ignore it if you want, but if you don't get stuff done by this date, you're not going to get any orders.
Yeah.
There are some things where it's like, you know, you just have to do that. But there's other things where it's like, well, it would have been ideal to have this by this date, but it's just not going to be ready. So what's a realistic date? You know, because as like the whole sampling process, you've got to get those samples perfect. So that's a big thing that can hold everything back, because you know, you want to just press go, but if you're not happy with
it,
you can't force it. So yeah, anyway.
Oh, that's good. It sounds like you've had a real deep thinking about those deadlines that are important and those ones that are okay to let go, which is great for everyone's mental health, really, isn't it?
Oh, look, I think I once heard Liz Gilbert, Eat, Pray, Love Liz Gilbert, but she's amazing. And I heard her say on a podcast, oh, I've realized my full-time job is looking after my mental health, and then being a writer is like, you know, my secondary job. And I was like, yes, that is, I think it's really true. And I think it's true for everyone. You gotta look after that stuff. So
Well, that sounds great. So can we talk a little bit about your travels? Because that's very exciting. We've sort of touched a little bit about how you've been traveling around Australia, but can we really understand, you know, what made you decide to, that's a big decision to get rid of all your, you know, where you're living and buy a van and that's your home. Can you tell us a little bit about how that all started and how it works?
Look, we always dreamed of traveling, but we sort of anticipated it would be when we're a lot older. We bought our dream house in 2015. It was everything that we'd ever wanted, this incredible property on an acre of land. It was just like so beautiful. And then we were like, great. And so this is where we're going to live. And we did it for a few years and we didn't like it. And it was really surprising to both myself and my partner that, you know, we didn't want that for ourselves.
Yeah. What was it that you didn't like?
I think it was just the fact that, well, we bought a house that needed a lot of work and attention, an old, you know, school, converted schoolhouse, a Federation sort of style house. And so we spent a lot of time just doing maintenance. We had an acre of land to maintain, which just took a huge amount of work. And it just sucked up so much of our time. Mm. And we constantly felt guilty if we weren't working on the house. But it also, like, we just wanted to be traveling and seeing things and experiencing Australia and have a bit more adventure in our lives. So my partner was offered a contract in a very remote town in Australia, up in like the Gulf of Carpentaria. And that was a really great opportunity for him. And, you know, that was a bit of a catalyst, but we managed to, we put our house on the market, sold it, packed up all of our stuff, you know, took loads of stuff to the charity shop, had a huge garage sale and sort of drove up in a four-wheel drive to this town in the middle of nowhere, like 7 hours from the nearest supermarket.
Wow.
And yeah, so that was almost the first step. Well, we're just like, we just need to shake things up. We need to do something different. It was really hard, but it was also really good because I learned how to run my business completely remotely. And that's when I set up all my 3PL and all of that. And then from there, it was a bit of a, you know, we knew that we wanted to travel. We did a bit of traveling. Like we went to the Northern Territory in Kakadu and we had this four-wheel drive set up. And I saw a, you know, the contract was coming to an end. I saw a bus on Gumtree one day. So I saw this bus on Gumtree, a Toyota Coaster bus. And I said to Darren, we should buy this bus.
Yeah.
And we did. And we went, we still had 3 months of the contract left to go. So we bought it sight unseen, got it inspected. It was left in a storage unit in Early Beach. And we left the town we're living in, Burketown, you know, with our few possessions and drove down to Early Beach and picked up our bus on New Year's Eve in 2019.
Wow. What a time.
Yeah, fun times. And yeah. Yeah, it was interesting. So we had a plan to do a full loop of Australia. You know, we didn't have a like very definite itinerary marked out, but we, you know, we sort of thought, yep, we'll do a full loop. And then, you know, the first couple of months was definitely a learning curve. And yeah, it was a little bit difficult. We had to do a bit of work on the bus. So, you know, and then COVID happened and yeah, we were locked down.
So where were you when COVID hit, like March? Was that March last year?
That was March last year. So we'd actually picked the bus up in Early Beach and then we'd gone south down to the Sunshine Coast as far as there. And we'd done a bit of travelling and we were in, we were actually in Gympie when the COVID hit because we'd finally managed to get a awning put on the bus. So we were waiting for that to happen and we were like, oh my gosh, you know, we're going to be locked down. It was, we just needed the awning on because we realized like when we had picked up the bus, it didn't have an awning and that actually wasn't very pleasant because it meant like in the day, like you didn't have anywhere shady to sit. Mm-hmm. So anyway, yeah, lockdown happened and we didn't really know where we would go or what we would do. Because initially they just closed down every campsite, caravan park, free camp, rest area without much warning. And the rangers were just going around telling people to go home. But there's like approximately 70,000 people who live on the road full time, who've rented out their places, who've, you know, you know, who are full-time travelers. And, you know, it's not just backpackers and stuff, like there's grey nomads and there's people that are living, you know, in their caravans and vans and buses out of necessity. So, so yeah, that was interesting. But there was quite a few Facebook groups that emerged and we managed to find a position in a caravan park in Ellie Beach that was closed due to lockdown, but was looking for somebody who could do a couple of hours work a day in exchange, you know, for staying there. So we applied for that, got accepted by the lovely owner of the caravan park, and drove from Gympie to back to Ellie Beach in 10 hours. Because we couldn't even, and we like slept in a petrol, behind a petrol station, because, you know, you weren't allowed to stay anywhere. And this petrol station in Rockhampton, she was like, oh, it's fine, just go park in the, you know, truck area at that. And then we spent lockdown in Ellie Beach. So, yeah, that was worst places. It was actually just south of Ellie Beach, Conway Beach in the national park. And it was dog friendly, and we have our dog Gypsy with us, who travels with us. So that was another consideration, because there was a lot of places that, that you couldn't have a dog. So, yeah.
Wow. That's incredible. I think that's an untold story of COVID. I mean, I certainly wasn't aware. I'm sure a lot of our listeners out there weren't aware that they were shutting down those parks and things. Like,
oh, they shut everything down. And then eventually, I think so many people, you know, and because everybody had their own concerns, but there was a lot of lobbying done by people to get arrangements made, because obviously there were so many people. So in the end, you could go and sign an affidavit at the police station stating that you were a full-time traveler, that, you know, I can't remember exactly how it was worded, but basically that you didn't have a home to go to, and then you were allowed to stay. So, and they did go around and check. We had the police come around and check where we were staying, for example. And
it was.
And I think as well, it's like something people don't really want to complain about, because it's like, oh, boo hoo, you know, you're locked down in paradise. But there was, you know, there was some issues, and
it wasn't. It's never just a black and white story, is it?
Exactly. So, yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, thank you for sharing that. I'm glad you got somewhere to stay in Ellie Beach, south of Ellie Beach.
Yeah, we were very lucky, and like, we're just so grateful for that. And it was just amazing. Like, on these Facebook groups, people were just like, I've got a property, I've got, you know, how many acres, you know, if you're self-contained, just park up for free and wait it out. Like, you know, or so many people were just offering places to people in need. And it was just actually really amazing to see the generosity and kindness of people. And yeah, it was great.
That's lovely. Oh, it's really good. And so once you were there, can you help us understand, so you're literally working at digital nomad, as you said, that's a good word for it. So how did you physically manage your space for doing the business? You know, you've got your home life and you've got the van, but it's all in the one space, presumably. How does that work?
Oh, look, it's tricky. And I think sometimes, you know, like when we're in lockdown, it was a bit different because I did have internet access, and I just had to be structured as if I was working from home. There was obviously the thing, and I think everyone suffered this a bit, where during COVID, everything was so uncertain. So my creativity did suffer. Mm-hmm. Sure. And I had some periods where I just was like, I can't work. I don't know what I'm doing. What's happening? Mm. You know, and there was an issue with creative block, but, you know, I did my best and I just did what I could do. And yeah. And like on days, like I have a little desk inside my van, you know, that I work from. And then there was like picnic tables I could go work at, and, you know, little shelters, because it was a caravan park. So, you know, I just go and sit somewhere and do my work. And yeah, having Wi-Fi was great. When we were actually traveling, it's a lot trickier because, you know, it's hard to manage your schedule, and it's really hard to guarantee access to the internet. Mm-hmm. Because our bus is on solar panels, if it was cloudy for a few days, like, we wouldn't have enough power. Pre-COVID, I did spend a bit of time like going into libraries or shopping malls, especially in far north Queensland, that had a couple of hours work in a cafe or, you know, a library where I could, you know, get some Wi-Fi, get, you know, plug my laptop in and do all of that. But yeah, and then some days it's just idyllic and you've got all the power you need, you've got a Wi-Fi connection and you're parked up next to this incredible beach. And, you know, I think it is a big part of it is just accepting that it is difficult and you're not always going to
be able to work as you would from home. Like, mm-hmm. and I think people, you know, there'd be times where I knew that I was going somewhere really remote, mm-hmm. And I wouldn't have any internet or anything. And I would just set up a email responder, like a vacation responder, just saying for the next 8 days, I'm probably not going to have internet. So I will respond on my return. Mm. Yeah, it's kind of hard. Like there would be times where I'd get stressed and, you know, and I think the other thing that was tricky was samples, because not having a permanent address to send samples to, and I find, yeah, workarounds for that. And that's why I just sort of put a lot of product stuff on pause, you know, because yeah, it's all about timing. So I'm trying to use this time now in Sydney before we head off on our next trip to sample as many designs as possible. So even before I go, even if I don't release things until I'm already on the road, I've approved the samples and I know what things are going to look like. Yeah.
Sounds good. Sounds sensible. That makes sense. So when you did finally get out of lockdown, when was that and where did you go?
Well, so I think they changed the rules in May. I think like the 25th of May, where you could go more than like 50 kilometers, and we hot footed it straight up to Port Douglas. Nice. So one of my best friends in the whole world, Amanda, lives up there. She was actually locked down in Tasmania at the time. We were both going to be having our 40th birthdays together, and the plan was always to be in Port Douglas in July to celebrate our 40th birthday together. But we'd been to Port Douglas a few times previously. So I did, you know a few of her friends, and I did that thing where I was like, hello, I'm Amanda's friend. She's not here yet, but can we hang out? And I was like really like brought into the circle of friends there. And yeah, we ended up, because everything was so uncertain with border closures and things, we just kind of wanted to stay in Queensland because, I mean, purely selfish reasons, but we didn't want to go into a COVID hotspot and then be locked down again. Port Douglas was pretty untouched by the whole thing, and it's so beautiful up there. We spent a lot of time up in the Daintree. We went up to Cooktown and went to some really like wild remote places up there. And yeah, we basically spent until September, because we just didn't have certainty. And then when the border opened between Queensland and New South Wales, we decided, right, we're going to leave and continue our trip. But being up there was just amazing. And yeah, I feel like a Port Douglas local now.
Oh, that's nice. And do you have any highlights to share from up there? Obviously, it was maybe good in line with your philosophy of slowing down and really seeing a place. I guess you must feel like you've seen that place
pretty well. It's all a highlight. I mean, spending time in the Daintree, it's just stunning. And because I have, I've done work with Rainforest Rescue, who are this incredible not-for-profit, who buy up parcels, buy back parcels of the Daintree that had previously been developed, and they reforest them. I hope I'm explaining that well. They're really amazing. So being in the Daintree was great. And then I also made friends, like so many people that live up there, you know, work in relation to the Great Barrier Reef. Sorry, that wasn't very articulate, but they work either as divers or like on the boats that go out, or marine biologists. And I just met so many amazing people that just educated me so much on what's happening with the Great Barrier Reef and the conservation projects that are happening. And just, they were so passionate about protecting the Great Barrier Reef and being able to go out on the reef and experience it, which I'd, you know, was lucky enough to do previously as well. And yeah, so that was very special.
So for those listeners, I'm sure some of them have been, but not all of them. I certainly haven't embarrassingly been up there and haven't been to the Daintree. Can you sort of describe what the natural environment is like?
Oh, it's so the Daintree is like, I'm almost feeling emotional just talking about it. It's people live there. So there are parts which are, you know, very inhabited, but people sort of live very much in nature. Like it's still quite wild. And then there's parts that are completely wild. It's magnificent. I don't know. I don't even know how to describe it. It's just exactly what you would picture from just like the most beautiful ancient rainforest. The plants are just incredible. And the beaches are, I mean, unfortunately you can't swim in a lot of them because of crocodiles and stingers and sharks. But some places you can swim and it's just paradise. It's, it's amazing. And you know, it's quiet. I mean, especially when we were up there, there's not much happening and there's just lots of places to explore. There's some very sacred places as well that, you know, you can go to and, you know, some people are more respectful than others of those places, but yeah, it's just incredibly special. And there's a feeling about it that is just hard to describe. And then the Great Barrier Reef. So the first time we went out on the Great Barrier Reef, my partner's mum was over from Scotland and my mum also came up from Sydney and they were like, oh, like we'll come out on the boat. But, you know, they were both a bit nervous about swimming and they didn't want to get their hair wet and and then the day before we were meant to go out, they both, we came back to the hotel we were staying at and they were both in the pool with their pool noodles and their goggles and practicing. So they decided to come and it was truly mind, like, I can't even describe it. I'm so glad that they did it. We all went out, we just went snorkeling, like none of us are divers. And it was everything, you know, you hear about, like we went on one of the much smaller boats and, you know, like, again, I'm getting emotional just thinking about it. But we got back to the boat and my mum and Darren's mum were both in tears.
Oh, wow.
Like crying. And then we started crying. We were all bawling and everyone else on the boat was like, what is wrong with these people? They were like, thank you so much. I can't believe we got to see that. Like, you know, I can die happy now, basically, that I've seen that. It's so incredible. And it truly is. Like, it's, you know, anyone who can go out on the Barrier Reef and see how incredible it is and then not want to protect it, I don't know what's wrong with those people. The fact that, you know, there's things happening where, you know, they're talking about dumping sludge into the Barrier Reef just makes me so, so angry. So anyway, so I think those are the, you know, definitely two things that really blew my mind and I'm so passionate about.
And what was so mind-blowing, was it just the amount, the colours or the different variety of animal, like sea life or?
All of it, the coral, the colours, the fish, like we saw a turtle, everything. And it was just, and it would just keep going and you'd think, oh, that there can't be anything more amazing than this. And then you keep going and you'd see something else and it was like, how? And you know, you just didn't want to get out and I was like, I could just stay down here all day. Like, I just, it was fascinating. And like just seeing like all the, you know, creatures interacting with each other and hiding in the different things. And yeah, I've just never seen, and it was the colors, it was just magical. So special. Yeah. And I don't know. You have to see it. You have to go see it.
Great. You're inspiring me to push it up the top of my bucket list. So you were in Port Douglas, you saw the Great Barrier Reef and in the Daintree and having a lovely time. And then, as you said, sort of Queensland, New South Wales borders opened. And so then where was it that you went next?
We just made our way kind of slowly down the coast, meandering. We knew we wanted to be in Sydney for Christmas. So we knew like that was our only kind of timeline. And yeah, so we just we revisited because we used to live in Coffs Harbour. So we went and spent a bit of time in Coffs Harbour and, you know, spent time with lovely friends that we had there. The only place we didn't go, unfortunately, was the Gold Coast.
It's going to say, you could come visit me.
I know. Do you know what? There's not one single dog-friendly place you can really camp in the whole Gold Coast.
Oh, that's terrible.
There's maybe one, but it's like a really big caravan park and we're not big fans of like, that sounds mean. It's just didn't come up somewhere we wanted to stay and it was fully booked. So there's just nowhere. So even though we were kindly allowed to stay in a lovely caravan park during lockdown, for us, because we don't have kids, because we've got a dog, and because we're looking after our money so we can travel as long as possible. We don't tend to stay in a caravan park unless there's no other option. Yeah. And also, like, you know, if we want to stop and do our laundry because they always have laundromats. Yeah. But yeah, the Gold Coast, there was barely even any caravan parks except to dogs. So, but we did, we were like in the hinterland of the Gold Coast. We just visited lots of places. We stopped in Byron for a while and Lennox. We had a lovely friend there who let us park our bus out the front of their place. And yeah, but we just kind of meandered our way down. We were planning to go for the last stretch inland, like via Tamworth and Armidale, except there was a huge heat wave. And by that point, we were like, oh, we don't want to be in 47 degree temperatures. Yes. But, so we took a week off the trip. We were like, went to mum's house. Yeah.
Yeah, sounds good.
And then we got straight to Sydney, to the Northern Beaches, and went straight into lockdown.
I was going to say, what happened? There was a lot of lockdowns in Sydney over Christmas. Did you hit those?
And it was so frustrating because luckily, though, my mum and my brother, like, and my youngest brother, we were all in the same zone because they put the Northern Beaches into two zones. So we were in the same zone, but my older brother and my nephew and stuff, they were in a different zone, so we didn't get to have Christmas together, unfortunately. Mm. But we had Christmas on the 26th of Jan instead. So
good idea.
Yeah.
Oh, at least you were in Sydney. That's good.
Yeah. But it's...
And then you said you've had a little break. So you're just having a break now and you're going to go off again.
Yeah. So we've had, I mean, some personal reasons you know, all of that stuff. But, yeah, and like I said, I'm really just trying to get as much creative work done that's tricky to get done on the road and build up a little back catalogue of work.
Yes.
And then we've also been doing a little renovation of the bus. Mm-hmm. So I keep calling it a bus and a van. It's actually technically a bus. Mm-hmm. It's a Toyota Coaster, and it used to be a church bus.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah, so we've still got the little church logbook, and her name is Daisy. So after spending a year living in the bus, we just had some like thoughts on ways to make it more comfortable and to use the space better. So we are currently doing a renovation. Nothing major because neither of us are skilled in woodwork in any way. So we're doing stuff within our own limitations.
Okay.
But, you know, doing some things to make, you know, a lot of storage things and stuff to make it more comfortable and to use the space really well.
Oh, that sounds good. Sounds like you must be experts at that.
I can't wait to get back on traveling and traveling.
So where are we going to go next?
So we're going to finish our loop, COVID lockdowns permitting. So we were planning to kind of go along the south coast of New South Wales and basically go around the coast, along the Great Ocean Road, South Australia, all the way to Western Australia, and then probably all the way up to the Kimberley, and then on the way back take the inland route, go through the Nullarbor and through that way. So, yeah, we're planning to finish the full loop. We probably won't go back to the Northern Territory, like the north of the Northern Territory or Far North Queensland, just because we've spent a lot of time in that area and we have spent very little time south. So we're just super excited to explore that part of our beautiful country. And it's so funny because, you know, sometimes like I'll have ideas for designs and I'm like, oh, I'd really like to do like, I don't know, a Numbat or this or that. And then I'm like, I haven't been there yet, so I can't draw. Wait. The quokkas have to wait. So,
The quokkas, right, Ness Island. That'll be great.
I can't wait to meet some quokkas, honestly. So
yeah. I think Numbats are coming into their own now, though. People seem to know a bit more about them and, you know, they're a very unknown animal and the spotted quolls and things. So.
All right. So I'm hoping to meet a lot of more of those animals in person and then include them in my art.
And wombats.
I love a wombat. They're the best. My partner's from Scotland and the first camping trip we ever did in Australia when we came here 10 years ago now, we encountered a rather large wombat snuffling around our tent, and he was terrified. And I was like, it's just a wombat. And he's like, it's a bear.
It's a bear.
Very big wombat, though. Like, it did sound like it could have been a grizzly bear.
Funny, yes, when our native animals are looking for a partner, shall we say, they often can have very loud noises, can't they?
Very loud and very grunty.
Oh, that's funny. So we're sort of coming on. We have talked for a while, but we haven't actually talked specifically about your artwork, because you've got such beautiful Native Australian designs depicting all sorts of flora and fauna, like you said. Can you help us understand a bit about your creative process, like maybe when you're in Port Douglas, you know, and in the Daintree inspired by all these things around you? How does that all come together to be the beautiful pictures that we see?
So I, wherever I am, wherever I go, I always have either my DSLR camera or my phone with me, and I take pictures everywhere. Mm-hmm. I do like to as well sometimes take little clippings so I can draw things from life, but I'm also very conscious that, you know, you've got to be a bit aware when doing that and careful. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to start pulling apart native plants, but definitely photos, and I just soak it all in. And I also just sometimes will write lists, or, you know, an idea will come into my head like, oh, you know, I want to do like a tropical print, or, you know, like an Australiana kind of eucalyptus inspired print. I don't know, I'm not explaining it well, but something will come into my head, and I'll almost write like a list of different animals and plants that should be in the print and try and get them to flow. So I actually have a Daintree print, for example, and then, you know, there was, you know, the Boyd's forest dragon and like tree frogs and azure kingfishers. And wherever I can, I will, you know, draw from my own photos. And then sometimes if I really, you know, need to, like I'll look on Pinterest, or I'll look on Instagram or something to, like, you know, find pictures to draw from and be inspired by. But yeah, like, I just want to kind of capture, you know, our native animals through my drawings. But then I'll sort of put them all together into a print. And then with the color palettes, my color palette is constantly evolving. I went through this weird phase where I did a print that was quite neutral and it went really well. And then I was like, oh, neutrals is a trend. Maybe I need to do neutrals. But my natural vibe is probably more colorful and a bit bold with color. And I've actually just, the new range I'm about to release, I've gone back to just like, color, crazy color. So yeah, I kind of have like my standard sort of palette that I use, but then, you know, I just try and I don't know.
I guess it would be pretty hard to depict things in far north Queensland and not have a decent amount of colour in there.
Totally. I mean, especially so the new prints I'm doing are all inspired by the Great Barrier Reef, and I'm like, well, there's got to be every colour, all the colours, all of the colours, because that's what it is, it's like down there. So, yeah, totally. And I think as well, like, it's always a mistake to be like, oh, it's a trend, so I should try and do this. Every time I do it, I regret it. So. I'm not caught up on making everything completely true to life. Like, I give myself a bit of, you know, creative license, but I just try and capture, you know, the beauty and the colors, and not overthink it. But with the color palettes, it's all about trying to just balance it and think about what the end product's going to be. So
And I look at your work and I would guess it's like a watercolor and pen. But what mediums do you use to create your pieces?
So I do everything. The initial drawings are all pen. So I use pigment liners, all different weights to create those. I love using watercolor. I love using gouache. But I have started, especially since being on the road, doing a lot more of my coloring now in Photoshop. It's one of those, like, I struggle with it a bit, but it is to do with space and practicality. And also, unfortunately, for textile design especially, I've had a few situations where when you scan things in to put them onto a fabric, which is kind of my main thing now, the colors just don't translate and they end up looking a bit dirty, and you end up spending so much time color correcting it in Photoshop. You're like, I should have just done this in Photoshop.
Yes.
So I think I was thinking the other day, I'd like to get back into doing some more originals where they can be in watercolor. But for my textile designs, they do kind of, it's just a lot easier for me to create the colors in Photoshop. But I always draw things by hand because I just find drawing stuff, like doing the actual drawings on a computer, for me, for my work, it just never looks quite the same. Like it can never capture that kind of sinuous line and the characters in the faces the way I want to if I try and.
Yes, and there's a certain weight in the weight and lightness of how you'll be optimizing when you draw that it's difficult to replicate.
That's it. So it's a tricky one. And yeah, I think I think it's about finding the balance. But sometimes when you're working, because even now, even though we're not in the bus, I'm in a tiny, tiny apartment. And I, you know, kind of don't have a huge amount of space. So back when I had my huge shed that was, you know, bigger than this whole apartment, I, you know, could really get stuck in and do screen printing and do watercolors and have canvases and paint and you know, really go for it. And now I've just learned to be a lot more basic. And when I'm in the bus, like I have my little box and I have done some painting, and it's when we're going to be stopped somewhere for, you know, a few days and the weather's right and, you know, I've got a space to set it up. But yeah.
So that sounds tricky. Do you miss having all that space? Do you miss that?
I do, but also like you kind of, it swings and roundabouts because I'm like, well, I get to have the freedom of living in the road and you know, there's advantages and disadvantages to both. And I think something that, like, one of the reasons we're doing this is I'm not going to be on living in a bus for the rest of my life, but we want to see this whole country and we've got some ideas about where we want to end up. But my dream is to end up having a base again and taking all the things I've learned, you know, about where I actually want to be, but and then I'll set up a studio again. So that'll be my reward, you know. One day I'll be able to, like, you know, there's certain ideas that I have and I'm like, oh, I can't really do that, you know. So hopefully, yeah, at some point I'll be able to be a bit more, I don't know, messy.
Yes, that makes sense. That was going to be my next question. Do you see yourself travelling for the indefinite future, or do you see yourself finishing Australia? So you definitely think that Australian loop is the end point, you think, possibly, for your travels?
I think, like, what I'd love to do is find somewhere that's, you know, that we love and it's a place that is very hot in summer. Take some time to travel through the hottest months down south. But if it's somewhere that's very cold in winter, take some time every year still to travel up north. Like, I still want to keep our bus. Like, it's just, you know, such a, you know, personal thing. And I'd love to find somewhere where I can still have the opportunity, you know, to have a base, but spend some time traveling when the weather, you know, necessitates it. And my partner doesn't like, surprisingly, for someone born and raised in Aberdeen, he doesn't like the cold. he's pretty laid back and he's happy to go wherever. His only request is to not be cold. So
fair enough.
He's not enjoying the Sydney winter right now.
Right. Given he's in Australia, that shouldn't be a too hard brief to meet, really, should it?
Yeah. So as long as we can keep his little tootsies warm, he's happy.
Well, that's good. And it sounds like Daisy's a permanent member of the family now.
Oh, she so is. Like, I don't think we'll ever let her go.
That's lovely. Yeah. So thank you for sharing all of that. Did you want to talk about your latest range a bit more about that you're bringing out
soon? I would love to, just quickly, because I am actually launching it next week. So I've got lots of stuff coming, but next week, on the 8th of June 2021, it's World Oceans Day, and I will be officially kind of releasing the new range and announcing a really amazing new partnership that I have. I'm not going to reveal who it is, but World Oceans Day should give it a clue. And so I'll still be partnering with Rainforest Rescue, but I'll be partnering with two different not-for-profits this year to raise money for like really great conservation causes. So yeah, and I'll be sending all the info out on my mailing list, and I'll be sending a free gift out to people who subscribe, which is going to be really beautiful. So yeah, please do if you interested in finding out who I'm partnering with and getting that free gift. Sorry, shameless self-promotion.
That's okay. We'll put all the links in the podcast. Is that just to your website?
Yeah, if you just go on my website, a little thing should pop up saying how to subscribe. And yeah, but my new collection is all, the first drop is all about the Barrier Reef. I couldn't help but be inspired, and not just the Barrier Reef, but Australia's ocean in general, and also like maybe some slightly more magical elements that I've taken some creative license with. But yeah, it's all about the oceans and the reef.
Right. And so just for our listeners, that website is thescenicroutestyle.com.
Yeah, thescenicroutestyle.com.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, and we'll put that link in the show notes as well. Thank you. That's great. Yeah. So that's what's next for you, basically, is those new ranges. Is there anything else coming up you wanted to let listeners know about that they'd be interested in?
Gosh, I think I've got a couple of really cool collaborations. So there's something, yeah, I can drop some of those. So I'm doing some candles again this year as a collaboration. And I'm working with an incredible embroidery artist to release some of my work as embroidery kits. Yeah, and I've got a few other like cool projects like that where yeah, I'm really excited to work on them. Yeah, and I think that's kind of it. I mean, yeah, I'm doing a coloring book. I'm not sure if I mentioned that earlier, which people have been asking me to do for years.
Yes, that's a good idea.
Yeah, so that's going to be coming up. And then, yeah, like tea towels, fabrics. And I've started working on the sort of second drop, like a smaller range later in the year. Yeah, so that'll drop before Christmas. So
fantastic. And you've got calendars coming out. When will they be out?
Calendars, I think they're going to be 1st of August. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the last 2 years they have sold out. So I'm going to be ordering a few extra this year so people don't get disappointed. It's just finding that balance, because you don't want to be stuck with them in January and then.
No, it's a tricky one, isn't it?
It totally is. And because so everything in terms of my stationery, everything's printed in Australia. Everything's 100% recycled. Like I use a really eco-friendly printer, and the last thing I want to do is overproduce. So I really try and encourage, you know, so it's hard to get that balance right.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think I'm going to be a bit more generous with the quantities this year. And the last, so I think last year I raised, I sold 500 calendars. So I raised like $2,500 for Rainforest Rescue. So hopefully I can do even better than that this year.
Fantastic. Well, I'm sure our listeners would love to help you do that and support a worthy cause, as well as have your beautiful artwork on their walls all year.
Yay. Thanks, Felicia.
So where else can our listeners find out more about you? We've got your website. You're on Insta and...
Yeah, I'm on Facebook and Instagram, mm-hmm. Both at The Scenic Root Style. I have started a TikTok, but I don't quite get it. Like,
no.
But I am on there. So, you know, cool. I've just posted a few little things on there, but I'm like, I don't know, these trends. So, so yeah, but definitely Instagram is the main place.
Fantastic. Well, thank you. Could I do a quick fire round with you to sort of get to know you a bit better? On a personal note?
Yes, that would be delightful.
Yeah, I guess these questions. So, what's your favourite Australian animal and why?
Oh, it's so tough. I love them. I think I am going to go with the wombat, though. I just think they're fascinating. They are, like I said, so snuffly, and they're just really incredible creatures. And I think, I know this has since been disputed, but, you know, I remember like reading that whole story with the bushfires, how other animals were sheltering in their burrows. I don't know. I just think, yeah, they're really fascinating and beautiful creatures, and they've got a lot of personality. And also the square poo thing is very interesting to me.
I didn't know about that.
Oh, yeah, they're And there's a whole scientific reason behind it. So if you Google a wombat square poo, you're going to go down on a whole internet.
Well, I know they certainly help all the other animals with the way they, but not just their burrows underground, but also the way they turn the soil and things.
Yeah.
Wow. Great. Oh, there you go. Another thing to look at. Okay. So Vegemite, yes or no?
Absolutely not. No way. Oh. I cannot cope with it, and I never have been able to. And even when I lived over in London, you know, I'd just be like, people would be like, oh, yeah, you're eating the Vegemite, getting Vegemite care packages. And I was like, get it away from me. So, you know, it's just one of those things I can't. I've tried so many times, but I just can't.
I'm not fully Australian.
Controversial. I'm not a true Australian. My dirty secret has been revealed.
So what was the first Australian concert you went to?
Oh, the first Australian concert I went to wasn't an Australian artist, but it was I went to see Lenny Kravitz at the Entertainment Centre when I was 13 years old on the Let Love Rule tour with my
in Brisbane, the Brisbane Entertainment.
It was in Sydney Entertainment.
Sydney Entertainment, yeah.
It was like so amazing. And Lenny, he was like in at his absolute prime, I'm going to say. We were down in the mosh pit. He walked into the audience. He was just like, yeah, it was so cool. And like both of our parents were just, we had to fight right up until the day before to be allowed to go. Still the best concert of my life.
What were some of the arguments you used that it was okay to go?
Oh, there was just like begging and just begging basically. And I think because my friend's parents said yes first, and then I was like, oh, her dad's going to drop us off and pick us up and he'll wait out the front. And da-da-da. My mom was like, oh, it's very dangerous to go into the city. Like, oh God, it was a whole.
And in the mosh pits, you would have had nightmares.
Oh, I think just the power of 13-year-old girls, just they can just wear people down. And I think, I was very sulky at the dinner table for so long that my mom just got sick of it.
Yeah, right. That's funny. And what's your favourite Australian biscuit?
Definitely the Kingston. I love a Kingston. They're just, yeah, the perfect biscuit for me. And they're not too big. So, yeah, they're just yummy. And because I also like, what? Because there's the biscuit the Kingston's made from. Are they butternut or something? I don't know. Yeah, so I like those two. But the Kingston with the little filling and, yeah, they're delicious.
Oh, there you go. Next bucket place list to visit, sort of. You're doing your whole life is a bucket list.
There's so many places. I think it's a top, like, I've been reading about the limestone coast in South Australia. Oh, I'm dying to get there. The Mornington Peninsula looks so amazing. Like, oh, there's so many places I haven't been yet, and I just can't wait to go. And then Western Australia, I mean, all of Western Australia, can I say the whole state?
Yes.
Everyone that we meet traveling that has done the loop the opposite way, they're just like, oh, you haven't been to WA. Oh, just wait, you haven't seen anything yet. So,
I think with your love of, I've been lucky enough to see some of Western Australia and just the native. Beauty, the beauty of the native plants and everything is just, it will blow you away.
I can't wait. I'm so excited.
So can't wait to see what you are inspired to produce by it, actually. It would be incredible.
Well, yeah, not long to go now till we head off. So
no, you must be getting very itchy feet.
Very, very itchy feet.
Oh, well, that's lovely to have you on the podcast today, Victoria. Thank you so much. I've loved learning more about you and your journeys.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
I loved it.
Nice to chat. When you asked me, I was like, oh, it'd just be great to have a really good catch up. So definitely.
Definitely. Thank you so much.
That concludes today's episode with Victoria McGrane of The Scenic Route. I don't know about you, but I'm definitely inspired to travel to some of these amazing places in far north Queensland. Coincidentally, on top of selling Australian gifts that spark joy and delight, we've just launched our Australian Experiences gifts in partnership with Experience Oz. There's a raft of amazing experiences to do all across Australia, and I'm sure those tour operators, especially in far north Queensland, where Victoria's been, would welcome you with open arms right now. We feel passionately about supporting them. So if you're interested in visiting or doing an amazing tour or experience, go to www.istillcallaustraliahome.com and in the top menu bar, check out the experiences section. Also, don't forget to pop onto Victoria's website, thescenicrootestyle.com, before June the 8th to take advantage of her offer of a free gift for those who subscribe to her mailing list. That's thescenicrootestyle.com, and she'll be announcing her new partnership on June the 8th, 2021. We've also got these and all the links mentioned in the podcast on our show notes on our I Still Call Australia Home website under the podcast section in the main menu bar. In the meantime, stay safe out there and happy travelling wherever you may roam.